Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to really dig into concepts you might think are familiar, but actually have these incredible layers of history and meaning.
Yeah, things that really resonate today.
Exactly. And today, we're diving deep into one of the big ones, the fourth commandment, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Now, most of us hear that and think, okay, religious context. But we want to explore its much deeper origins and its impact way beyond just one tradition.
That's the plan. We're going to trace the Sabbath right from, you know, ancient times all the way to what it might mean for us now. And we'll be drawing quite a bit from Dr. Anthony J. Tomasino's work on this specifically, the Ten Commandments, Session 5, the Sabbath. It's a really rich resource.
Right. So our mission today, let's unpack what this command actually means. How did it shape societies? And maybe most importantly, what could keeping it holy look like for you in this, let's face it, crazy nonstop world? Okay, maybe we should start with some, well, surprising modern examples, people who really took this seriously.
Yeah, those stories are powerful.
Like Eric Liddell.
Yeah.
You know, from Chariots of Fire, the Scottish sprinter.
Although, right, Olympics, 1924.
Yeah. Refused to run the 100-meter final because it fell on a Sunday. His best event.
Incredible pressure, I imagine.
Totally. But then he runs the 400 meters, not his specialty, and wins gold. Apparently got a note beforehand saying, "He who honors me, I will honor." Wow.
That's quite a story.
And then there's Eli Herring, much later, 1995, a top football prospect.
Ah, the NFL draft refusal.
That's him. Walked away from potentially huge money because he wouldn't play on Sundays. Said Sunday is the day for church, not for making money. Just like that.
That takes serious conviction.
It really does. And Michael Jones, the New Zealand rugby star back in 91, refused a World Cup match on a Sunday. Went from hero to, well, the article says something of a pariah.
Oof. That's tough. Shows how countercultural it can be.
Exactly. Which brings us right back to the core question. What is the Sabbath, really? Let's unpack that word.
Okay. So the word itself, Sabbath, comes from the Hebrew verb Shabbat.
Shabbat. Okay.
And it just means to cease or to stop.
To cease or stop. Simple enough.
Right. So it has this kind of dual meaning. You're ceasing from the week. Like the week is ended.
Right. End of the cycle.
And you're also ceasing from work. Stopping your labor.
That second part, that's the kicker, isn't it? Taking a whole day off, no work, no making money, just stopping.
It definitely goes against the grain.
Yeah, it feels, I don't know, almost un-American sometimes. You know, that whole 24/7 hustle culture idea where that scene is the virtue.
It's a real challenge to that mindset.
So thinking historically, was this idea common back then? Did Israel just, you know, borrow it from Egypt or Babylon?
That's actually one of the most fascinating things about it. The Israelite Sabbath seems to have been truly unique.
Really? Unique how?
Well, think about other practices. Like circumcision, Egyptians did that too. Avoiding pork. Other groups in the ancient Near East did that as well.
Okay, so those weren't exclusive to Israel.
Exactly. Yeah. But setting aside every seventh day as a day of complete rest from work, there's what? Just, well, there's no solid evidence that any of Israel's neighbors did that.
Yeah. No evidence at all.
There's some debate maybe about the Egyptians having a 10th day off or something, but it's fuzzy. Nothing like the consistent weekly seventh day Sabbath. So it really became this major identity marker for Israel, a sign of the covenant of Sinai. It set them apart.
Okay, that's significant.
Yeah.
But I have heard this theory, something about Babylon.
Oh.
Maybe it started there.
Ah, yes. The Babylonian origin theory. That pops up now and then. It's interesting, but pretty speculative.
Speculative how? Tell me more.
Well, it came from a German scholar, Meinhold, way back in the early 1900s. He pointed to a Babylonian monthly festival, maybe called Shibutu or Sibutu.
Okay.
And the thinking was maybe that was the origin because, you know, in the Old Testament, sometimes the Sabbath is mentioned alongside the new moon festival.
Right. I've seen that. Like in Kings or the Prophets, sometimes they're even condemned together. Like, I hate your new moon festivals and your Sabbaths.
Precisely. So the theory went, maybe Sabbath started as a monthly full moon thing and then somehow merged with this seventh day rest idea.
Plausible on the surface, maybe?
Maybe, but honestly, there's just not strong evidence for it. It's a clever idea, but it doesn't really hold up under scrutiny. The uniqueness of the Israelite seventh day rest seems much more likely.
Okay, so if the Babylonian link is shaky, that uniqueness factor gets even stronger. Which leads to another question. Was the Sabbath actually being practiced before the Ten Commandments were given at Sinai?
That's a really key point. And yes, the text suggests it was.
Before the commandments, how do we know that?
Well, think about the story in Exodus 16, the manna in the desert.
Right, the bread from heaven.
Exactly. The people are told specifically not to gather it on the seventh day. Why? Because, and this is the quote, it's a day of Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord.
And this was before Moses went up the mountain. Before Exodus 20.
Yes, exactly. Before the formal giving of the law at Sinai. Huh. So the idea of a seventh day set apart for rest seems to predate the Ten Commandments themselves.
Wow. Okay, so why then? What was the reason given for the Sabbath in the actual commandments?
Well, there are actually two main reasons given in the Bible, which is interesting in itself.
Two reasons, okay.
The first one is tied to creation. You find this in Exodus 20 and also Exodus 31. God worked for 6 days, and then he rested on the seventh.
The Genesis story.
Right. God blessed the seventh day and made it holy because he rested. So this establishes the Sabbath as sort of a universal principle right from the beginning, a life rhythm built into the cosmos.
A foundational rhythm. Okay, what's the second reason?
The second one is found in Deuteronomy 5, and it's quite different. It links the Sabbath to the deliverance from slavery in Egypt.
The Exodus event.
Yes. It says, remember, you were a slave in the land of Egypt. The Lord your God brought you out of there. So the reason for rest here is rooted in compassion, in remembering their own suffering.
Because they knew what it was like to be worked without rest.
Precisely. They were worked and driven without rest. So this rationale emphasizes giving rest to others, your servants, your animals, everyone in your household, because you remember what it felt like not to have it. It's a very social justice-oriented reason.
So creation and deliverance.
Yeah.
Two powerful motivations.
Yeah.
But let's talk about that creation aspect for a second. The idea of God needing to rest. That can be a bit of a theological hurdle for some, right?
It definitely raises questions. An all-powerful God needing a break.
Yeah. How is that usually understood?
Generally, both Jewish and Christian traditions tend to interpret God's rest figuratively. It's not seen as God being tired or needing to recuperate.
Okay, so it's not literal exhaustion.
Right. It's understood more as God ceasing from the work of creation, setting an example, establishing that pattern or rhythm for us. It's a lesson for humanity, showing that rest is integral, built into the fabric of existence.
So it makes the principle binding on everyone, not just because God commanded it later, but because it reflects the way things are supposed to be.
Exactly. It's seen as binding upon all of nature, making it a universal principle, even as it also became a specific sign of the covenant for Israel.
Okay, that clarifies things. Now, shifting gears a bit, if this was so foundational, how seriously was it taken? What happened if someone didn't keep the Sabbath? I seem to recall some pretty harsh consequences mentioned.
Oh, absolutely. The consequences could be severe. There's a stark example in the book of Numbers, chapter 15.
Well, let me guess. The man gathering sticks.
That's the one. A man is found gathering sticks on the Sabbath, and the penalty is death by stoning.
Wow. Stoning for gathering sticks. That seems incredibly harsh to modern ears. What was the thinking there?
It's crucial to understand the community context. From their perspective, this wasn't just about one guy breaking a rule. It was seen as endangering the entire community's relationship with God and its social fabric.
How so? Endangering the community?
Think of it like this. And this is just an analogy. I remember when I was studying in Wilmore, Kentucky. It used to be a blue law town. Everything closed on Sundays.
Right. I remember those laws.
Then one convenience store decided to open on Sunday. Big controversy. One argument was, if they open, everyone else will have to open just to compete.
And did they?
They did. Soon, lots of places were open. The whole character of Sunday in that town changed because of one initial action.
Hmm. The domino effect.
Exactly. So in ancient Israel, the community felt that one person openly violating the Sabbath could set a precedent, undermine the covenant, and ultimately lead to societal breakdown or divine displeasure. The harsh penalty was, in a way, the community policing itself very strictly to prevent that unraveling.
That adds a different layer.
Yeah.
Still harsh, but I see the communal anxiety behind it. Okay, but here's something puzzling. If it was that serious, why is the Sabbath mentioned so infrequently outside the first 5 books, the Pentateuch?
That is a puzzle. You're right. Books like Joshua, Judges, Samuel, Kings, they barely mention it, if at all.
So was it just assumed, or maybe not enforced as strictly later on?
It's debated. There are a couple of tricky references in the Book of 2 Kings that hint at maybe a more nuanced picture and evolution in practice.
Okay, like what?
Well, 2 Kings 4. There's the story of the Shunammite woman whose son dies. Her husband asks her, "Why go to the prophet Elisha today? It is neither the new moon nor the Sabbath."
Hmm. implying people did go see prophets on the Sabbath.
It suggests the Sabbath was a day for religious activity, maybe pilgrimage or seeking counsel, which seems a bit different from later stricter interpretations about travel restrictions. It's, as Damasceno says, puzzling.
Interesting. Any other clues?
Then in 2 Kings 11, you have the account of the coup against Queen Athalia. It mentions guards changing shifts and being on duty at the king's palace on the Sabbath.
So essential work, like guard duty, was permitted.
It seems so, which might support the idea that maybe at that particular time, the Sabbath was understood more as a festival day, a day for worship and special activities, rather than a total cessation of all forms of labor.
So maybe the strictness varied over time.
It seems possible. Now, it's important to add that Sabbath sacrifices at the temple were always commanded and were never considered a violation of Sabbath rest. That was part of keeping it holy.
Right, the religious duties were different.
And later biblical writers, like the Chronicler, mention those sacrifices frequently. There's even a text from the Dead Sea Scrolls, the Songs of the Sabbath Sacrifices, which imagines angels in heaven performing sacrifices on the Sabbath.
Wow, so extending the Sabbath rhythm even to the heavens.
Exactly. It emphasizes this cosmic universal significance, like its rhythm is set in heaven itself.
Okay, but back on Earth, what about enforcement later on? Did it get stricter again?
We see efforts, yes. Nehemiah, after the exile, was very concerned about the Sabbath being ignored. He actually enforced a ban on commerce, buying and selling on the Sabbath in Jerusalem.
So, cracking down again, were people executed then, like the stick gatherer?
Interestingly, no. Nehemiah rebuked people, shut the city gates, threatened merchants, but there's no mention of executions for these violations, which suggests maybe the penalties had become less severe or enforcement focused more on public commerce than individual actions.
And what did the prophets say about all this? Were they concerned?
Oh, deeply. Prophets like Amos, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, they all condemned Israel for profaning the Sabbath, especially through conducting business.
What kinds of things did they complain about?
Amos has this great line where merchants are basically saying, "When will the new moon be over so we can sell grain, and the Sabbath so that we may offer wheat for sale?"
Impatient to get back to business.
Exactly. Jeremiah talks about bearing burdens, carrying goods for trade as desecration. Ezekiel lists profaning the Sabbath as one of the key reasons for God's judgment on Israel.
So despite the ideal, the prophets suggest it was often ignored.
Yeah, their condemnations strongly imply that, in practice, the Sabbath commandment was perhaps one of the least enforced or most frequently violated of the Ten Commandments, especially regarding commercial activity.
Fascinating. So it seems the actual practice and strictness ebbed and flowed. How did things change leading up to the time of Jesus in what's called Second Temple Judaism? Did interactions with Greeks and Romans affect things?
Hugely. That period saw a real intensification of Sabbath observance as an identity marker, precisely because of increased contact and conflict with Gentiles, especially during the Hellenistic period after Alexander the Great.
How did that play out?
It polarized the Jewish community. You had some called Hellenizers who wanted to assimilate, adopt Greek culture. The book of 1 Maccabees mentions them trying to undo circumcision and deliberately profaning the Sabbath to fit in.
Wow. Actively rejecting those markers.
Right. But then, in reaction, you had other groups who doubled down, emphasizing these very practices. Sabbath, dietary laws, circumcision as essential signs of faithfulness, and Jewish identity.
That tension sounds familiar, even today.
It really does. And this tension exploded during the persecution under the Syrian Greek ruler Antiochus Epiphanes.
The Maccabean Revolt period.
Exactly. There's this tragic incident where a group of very devout Jews, the Hasidim or pious ones, were attacked on the Sabbath. Because of their strict interpretation, they refused to fight back, refused to defend themselves.
And they were killed.
They were slaughtered. It was a massacre.
Oh, my goodness.
This led the Maccabees, who were leading the revolt, to make a really controversial but crucial decision. They swore an oath that they would fight on the Sabbath if attacked, prioritizing self-preservation.
There must have been a huge debate.
Oh, absolutely. Was it compromising the law? Was it necessary? The practical reality, though, was stark. If word got out that Jews were easy targets on the Sabbath,
they could just be picked off every seventh day.
Exactly. The revolt would have been over quickly. So that decision, while debated, arguably preserved the movement and, in a sense, the Jewish people at that critical time.
A pragmatic, if difficult, choice. Now, zooming out a bit, what was the situation like for Jews living in the wider Roman Empire around this time?
It's quite remarkable. Jews were a significant presence throughout the empire. Some historians even suggest they might have been one of the largest distinct ethnic groups, partly because Jewish families tended to be larger. They didn't practice infanticide like many Romans did.
Interesting. And how did the Romans view them and their Sabbath?
It was complex, a real mix of fascination and, frankly, hatred or contempt.
Fascination and hatred. How so?
Well, you have Roman writers like the famous orator Cicero giving speeches where he's just railing against Jews, very anti-Semitic stuff. But in those same kinds of sources, you find something intriguing.
What's that?
Roman writers complaining that Roman women were starting to imitate Jewish practices, specifically mentioning them observing the Sabbath.
Roman women keeping the Sabbath. No. Seriously.
Apparently so. So on the one hand, you had Romans mocking the Sabbath as an excuse for laziness, you know, complaining you couldn't make them work on their Sabbath day. But on the other hand,
there was imitation, emulation.
Exactly. This fascination and emulation, as Tomasino puts it, a real ambivalence. They didn't quite know what to make of it, but it clearly had some kind of appeal or influence.
That is fascinating, which brings us right up to Jesus. The Gospels show the Sabbath became a major point of conflict between him and the religious leaders, the Pharisees. Why was that?
It really was a flashpoint, and it largely came down to the interpretation of work. By Jesus's time, Jewish tradition, which was later codified in texts like the Mishnah and Talmud, had developed incredibly detailed definitions of what constituted prohibited work on the Sabbath.
Like what kind of details?
We're talking minute detail. Remember the man stoned for gathering sticks? Later rabbinic discussions would debate whether the act of stoning him constituted work on the Sabbath.
Wow.
Or take healing. According to some interpretations of the law at the time, you couldn't even set a broken bone on the Sabbath. You could maybe soak it, but not rub it with oil or apply a splint that was considered work.
So Jesus steps into this context.
Exactly. And what does he do? He heals people on the Sabbath. Repeatedly.
Right. The man with the withered hand, the blind man.
Several instances. And then there's the famous story of his disciples walking through a grain field on the Sabbath and plucking heads of grain to eat.
Why was that a violation? They were just eating.
Because they were plucking the grain directly from the stalk.
Yeah.
This was considered a form of reaping or harvesting, which was forbidden work. If the grain was already harvested and lying in a heap, picking it up might have been okay. But the act of plucking crossed the line.
The level of detail is just intense.
It really was. And Jesus's response to all this was fundamental. He didn't dismiss the Sabbath, not at all, but he challenged the interpretation.
What was his core message?
He famously said the Sabbath was made for the benefit of humanity, not humanity for the Sabbath.
Ah, flipping the priority.
Exactly. He advocated for a practical approach. The Sabbath is meant to be a gift, a benefit, a time for rest, worship, healing, doing good. It shouldn't become a burden crushed under the weight of endless man-made rules that actually harm people or prevent acts of mercy.
So it's about the spirit of the law, not just the letter.
Precisely. He was calling people back to the original purpose, rest, restoration, connection with God and others. If the rules got in the way of that purpose, then the rules needed reevaluating.
Okay, that makes sense. So after Jesus, what happened with Sabbath observance among his followers, the early Christians? Did they just drop it?
Not immediately, no. The very first Christians were, of course, Jewish, so they continued to observe the Sabbath. If you read the book of Acts, you see Paul and others frequently going to the synagogue on the Sabbath.
So they were still part of that rhythm?
Yes. But the perspective began to shift. Paul, for instance, wrote to the Colossians telling them not to let anyone judge them based on how they observed festivals, new moons, or Sabbaths.
Implying there was already some diversity in practice or judgment happening.
Likely both. Paul seems to be advocating for freedom here, focusing less on the specifics of how it's kept and more on the spiritual reality it points to. Don't get bogged down in the rules. Focus on the benefits, the substance.
And what about other New Testament writings?
The book of Hebrews takes a very interesting approach. It sort of spiritualizes the Sabbath. It talks about the promised Sabbath rest that believers enter into through Christ, seeing the weekly Sabbath as a kind of foreshadowing of that ultimate heavenly rest.
A taste of heaven, almost.
Kind of. A true, pure Sabbath in heaven, compared to which our earthly Sabbaths are just dim reflections. But here's a key point. No New Testament author actually tells people to stop keeping the Sabbath. They critique legalism, they spiritualize it, but they don't abolish the principle itself.
Okay, so if they didn't abolish it, how did the main Christian day of worship eventually shift from Saturday, the traditional Sabbath, to Sunday.
That was a gradual process, driven by a few factors.
Right, because most Christians worship on Sunday now.
Well, very early on, Christians started gathering on the first day of the week, which is Sunday. We see mentions of this in Acts 20 and 1 Corinthians.
Why Sunday?
Primarily because that was the day of Jesus' resurrection. It became known as the Lord's Day, a day to celebrate the resurrection.
Okay, the resurrection connection is key.
Yes, and there was also a practical element. In the Roman Empire, Sunday wasn't the universal day off we think of now, but it was often a day associated with public festivals honoring the sun god.
Sol Invictus, the unconquered sun.
Right. This sometimes meant that people, including Christian slaves, who might have had to work on the Jewish Saturday Sabbath, could gather more easily on Sunday. It was pragmatic.
Ah, practical logistics. Makes sense.
And then, as the church grew and became predominantly Gentile rather than Jewish, there was a natural and sometimes intentional move to distinguish Christian practices from Jewish ones. Focusing on Sunday worship was part of that separation.
So a combination of theology, practicality, and maybe some sociology.
Pretty much. By around 100 AD, Sunday observance seems to have been quite common in Christian communities. Some early church fathers even began to explicitly repudiate the Jewish Saturday Sabbath, emphasizing the Lord's Day instead.
And then it became official.
The final step, you could say, was in 313 AD when the Roman Emperor Constantine, after his conversion, officially declared Sunday a public day of rest throughout the empire. That really solidified the shift for Christendom.
Right. Okay, so that historical shift explains the Sunday practice. But it brings us back to, well, the crux of it for people listening today. Should Christians, or really anyone, still observe a Sabbath? Does that principle still hold?
That's the big question, isn't it? And I think looking back at the foundations helps. Remember Paul's idea of the law being like a tutor?
Yeah, teaching us principles.
Right. Even if you feel you've graduated from the specific requirements of the Old Testament law, the principles it taught remain valuable. And the Sabbath principle, as we discussed, seems rooted not just in the Sinai covenant with Israel, but in creation itself.
The universal aspect.
Exactly. And Jesus himself emphasized it was made as a benefit for humanity. So the underlying idea is the need for regular rest, for setting aside time for God and restoration that seems timeless and universally beneficial.
So for you listening right now, maybe thinking about your own hectic life, what are those enduring benefits? Why should you care about carving out a day of rest?
Well, there are several layers, I think, that are incredibly relevant today, maybe more than ever. First, there's an environmental or even just a physical benefit.
How so?
The principle of rest isn't just for humans. The biblical concept included rest for animals, even for the land itself, the idea of a sabbatical year where fields lie fallow. Our whole planet, the whole ecosystem, needs rhythms of rest and renewal.
We definitely see the effects when we ignore that.
Absolutely. And historically, attempts to mess with the 7-day cycle have usually failed. The French Revolution tried a 10-day week. The Soviets tried different systems. It didn't work. Why? People got exhausted. Productivity dropped. Even animals suffered. There were stories of horses dying from exhaustion under the 10-day week.
Wow. So that 7-day rhythm.
It just seems to work for human well-being, for nature's well-being. It's this ancient, originally Jewish rhythm that seems deeply ingrained.
Okay, environmental and physical well-being. What else?
Second, there's a really important ethical benefit. The Sabbath command wasn't just about you resting. It was about ensuring others could rest too. Your servants, your employees, even your animals.
Protecting others from exploitation.
Yes. It's fundamentally about protecting the vulnerable from being ground down by relentless demands for productivity. It's a check on greed, both societal and personal. It forces a pause on the drive to produce and profit. Think about modern Sunday closing laws where they still exist.
Like the ones you mentioned in Ontario.
Exactly. Those are essentially the state stepping in to enforce that ethical principle, ensuring most people get at least one day off, protecting workers from being forced to work 7 days a week just because competitors are open. It's a societal recognition of that need for collective rest.
A safeguard against burnout and exploitation.
Got it.
And the third benefit.
The third, and perhaps the deepest, is the spiritual benefit. Setting aside a dedicated portion of our time, whether it's a Saturday, a Sunday, or another day specifically for God, for worship, for reflection, for family, for deep connection, it does something profound.
How so?
It sets a pattern for the rest of the week. It reorients us. It reminds us that life isn't just about doing and achieving and acquiring. It's about being, connecting, replenishing our souls.
As opposed to just crashing on the couch or...
Or spending the day, say, on the golf course getting frustrated or catching up on emails at the office. Those might feel like breaks, But do they truly feed our souls? The Sabbath ideal invites us into activities that genuinely restore and reconnect us to God, to ourselves, to loved ones. It's an opportunity for spiritual nourishment.
That really resonates. It reminds me of this story I read from Letty Kalman, written maybe 75, 80 years ago. She wrote about a traveler in Africa on a long trek with local porters.
Okay.
They pushed really hard the first day, covered a lot of ground, but the next morning the porters just sat down, refused to move. The traveler was frustrated, offered more money, pleaded, nothing.
Why wouldn't they move?
He finally asked their leader why, and the leader supposedly said, "We went too fast yesterday. We must wait here today for our souls to catch up with our bodies."
Wow. Wait for our souls to catch up with our bodies. That's powerful.
Isn't it? And you think about that in the context of our lives today, this constant rushing, this whirling, as Tomasino calls it.
It makes that ancient wisdom feel incredibly urgent, doesn't it? How much more vital is that Sabbath principle, that deliberate pause, that day of refreshment and soul catching up for us now?
It really puts it all in perspective. So there we have it, our deep dive into the Sabbath. It started as this ancient command, maybe one we thought we knew.
But it unfolds into this incredibly practical, beneficial principle, something woven right into creation, into how we're designed to function best.
Absolutely. And maybe the most profound takeaway is that simple statement from Jesus. The Sabbath was made for your benefit. It's this weekly gift, this invitation.
An invitation to let your soul catch up with your body, especially in a world that never stops telling you to go further, faster, harder.
So the question for you listening right now is this. In your own life, with all its demands, how might embracing the spirit of the Sabbath, that intentional pause for rest, reflection, and reconnection, whatever day it falls on, how might that help you find more balance, connect with what truly matters, and maybe, just maybe, thrive?